Today's Mishnah in Masechet Taharot, brought to you from Yerushalayim HaKadosh, is Perek Hey, Mishnah Zion. So we're continuing on now with Sofek Tuma Bereshut HaRabim. And remember, one of the issues that we had involved ourselves with before was the question of Stam Roki. So we had the issue, what happens if there was spit in the Rishon Sarabim, and we had a specific thing over there that since a zof who spits, or any body fluid of a zof, is considered to be an avatuma, we're not certain about what it was that a person had stepped into and maybe was matamehim. And remember that the halacha, one of the six cases that we had where we will actually burn tuma, is a case of sofik. So that was one of the six. So let's see how that links to the din of Sofek Tumah Bereshut HaRabim. If somebody's sitting around in Rishus HaRabim, and somebody walks by and actually steps on his clothes as he was, you know, as he had a skirt on in those days, and some of it was steppable on without stepping on his toes, and somebody stepped on it. Or maybe someone spit, and he had come in contact with the spit. And if he was a Zov, then by stepping on the clothes, he would have been metami those clothes with Tumas Midras, which is a very chomer Tuma. And so too is the saliva, that's chomer Tuma, it would be metami Adam. So in such a case, the din would be, al ruko sorfinet atruma, yal begadav polchin achar harov. So we made one of the special sfeikas that we burned truma for is called sofek ruki. And therefore, if a person was mesupak about having been mit tameh from actual spit, the din is that actual spit, the sofek, is something that is so chamur that we will burn truma on it. But when it comes to the begadim, and to determine whether his begadim are considered to be the actual tumas midras, over there it depends on the people that walk in the streets in the city. If most of them are zavim, so then fine, then we would consider it to be tameh. But if not, if rov of the are taharim, then they're considered to be tahor. How about if he fell asleep in the Rishus HaRabim? So it was Yoshen Bereshut HaRabim, and he gets up without knowing whether anybody had stepped on any of his clothes while he was sleeping. Kelav are considered to be Tamei Midras, even if most of the city is Tar in this case, because the guy's been asleep for hours. Nobody was particularly careful from some idiot who's sleeping there in the street all night. And it's very likely that maybe 100 people stopped on his clothes. And in that case, maybe you're right, it's only a minority of people, but if you've got those many people, so then you would have to be machmir. And in such a case, kelav are tmei midras, because he has no idea. So says Rabbi Meir. Whereas the chachamim say, in this case, the din is that it's a typical sofek tumah bereshut harabim, because he doesn't know bichlal whether anybody stepped on his begadim. And we're not going to be machzik that somebody stepped on the begonim without our knowing.
Is that svek sveka, Rebbe? I don't know if somebody stepped, and even if they did step, I don't know if they're tummy.
Not really. Sometimes we'll treat it as that, but that's not what's going on. The question over here, are we machzik that there was a problem or not? So if you hold ein machzikin, Isura, remember that according to Rebbe Meir, usually holds that we're chayish lemiyuta, right? Whereas the chachon hold, we're not even chayish lemiyuta. So if we're chayish lemiyuta, so then there's more of a mocha for Rabbi Meir to be chayish in this case. Now, how about if somebody was noga b'yachad b'layla, somebody touched a person next to him in the middle of the night? He has no idea when he touched them, if this person is dead or alive. Me'ena yadua, of course, we only say dead or alive in English, because the the Christian society is so wrapped up in death that they'd always think, first he must be dead, then we'll think if he's alive. But in the Mishnah, it's he doesn't know if he's alive or dead, which makes more sense. So in the morning, he wakes up, sees the guy that was next to that he touched, and the guy's dead. Rabbi Meir is mitaher in that case, and the Chachamim are mitam'im because of the other klal that we had. So according to Rabbi Meir, it's a stam, suffik tumah brishut harabim. Suffik tumah brishut harabim is tahor. But we have another halacha that we spoke about earlier back in the third parak, which is called kol hatme'ot or kisha'at metziatan. We always look at the situation as it is at the time that we find the suffik. And since we found at the time that we found the suffik arising, this person was dead, so then we'd have to be cheshish that he was dead when he was touched. Now, this is not true in the case where he knew that the person had been alive when he went to sleep, because then the chazaka would have been that he continued to be alive till the very last moment. And then we would paskin on the basis of the chazaka. Here it's talked about we don't have a chazaka. A guy went to bed. He has absolutely no idea who was next to him. Over there, we run into the question of if I'd have no idea what it was. Then we have our klal of kol hatumot kisha'at mitziatan. Fine. This is a specific chumrah that we had before, remember. Mishnah, Perek Hey, Mishnah Chet. Now, problem arises in a case of a suffik tumah in a shos harabim where we had the din of rukim. The din of rukim are only in a case where we have to worry about someone who is not careful in town about spitting, despite the fact that that spit would be tameh. Normally, if you have normal people, nobody will spit in a way that is going to cause tuma in the Rishus Arab. But suppose you've got one insane woman in town. Let's say Shota Achat Be'ir. So if you have an insane woman, she basically has no sense of what is appropriate and what is inappropriate. And if she were a Nida and she was going to be Mitame with her spit, she wouldn't know the difference and she would not be careful not to spit if she's insane. Or for that matter, let's say you have a non-Jewish woman in town. She doesn't know nothing from these issues and is not concerned with these issues. And even though the truth is that a Isha Knanit, a non-Jewish woman, is actually not Metame at all, but remember that the Rabbanan were gozer that non-Jewish women should be treated, all of them, with the chumrah of zivas and nidais and so on, as we've seen in many other sugyas. So, there may be one very Jewish woman in town, but she's insane. Or there may be one Isha Knanit in town. Or maybe an Isha Kutit, with Machmer and Kutim, to give them the din of Goyim. So then, that's where we get the din of Stam Rukim. And Kol Arukim Shebe'ir Tmei'im. So this halacha of Suffolk Rukin is any time that there's someone who will not be makbid on spit. Mi shedarasa isha al begadav. Now let's say that a Kohen who's makbid now in Achilas Truma, he is sitting in an area where a woman steps on his clothes, or maybe we're talking about a case where yashva imo besfina. So you've got a rowboat, this is a small boat. We'll see why we're talking about specifically a small boat. And she is sitting in this boat with him. If she knows, imakirato, shehu ochel betruma, if he's known to be a kohen who eats truma, then we understand that she would be careful to warn him if, in fact, she had been metamehim, and then kelava tohorim. But if not, if she doesn't know him, then he would have to actually ask her and whether or not she was Tmeya. A bit of an embarrassment over here, but there's nothing much to do. Now let's analyze the situation in the boat. The case of stepping on him, that I understand what the issue is. But the problem is that, remember, a zav has a special kind of tuma, and that is, it's not simply if the zav will sit on you or sit on begadim that are roy to sit on. It's even in a case where somebody moves the zav, that will also be metamehim. And this is the special inverse type of masa, which is the midrash of the zav. So let's talk about a case. I mean, obviously, the case that we always like to use is the seesaw. So you've got a zav on one side of the seesaw, a heavier person on the other side of the seesaw, and he lifts the seesaw so that the zav is now lifted by him. So then the person that has lifted him, that chair of that seesaw, now that becomes the midrash of the zav. And therefore, it's going to be metame him. But the same thing would be true if we're in a boat, because basically a boat is a small rowboat is always a seesaw, because it's always rocking back and forth. And the individual that's in one side of the boat is actually lifting up the other side of the boat. And therefore, if you're sitting in the same boat with the zav, now, every time the boat is pushed back and forth by the weight, that the weight of the things that are on this person are going to be part of what pushes the zav up. And therefore, in that case, the begadim of the kohen would also be metame. Now, the person himself would not become tame in this case, because you have to be roi lekabalas tumas midras, but clothes are roi lekabalas tumas midras, and therefore you would still be tame. That's true, but you wouldn't be tame midras. Our Mishnah wants to talk about midras mamish, because we were talking about a midras as an avatuma. The person himself who lifts the zav is going to be a rishon tuma. That's true, but the begadim will be even worse. They will be an avatuma. So the Mishnah is more focused, because it started off with talking about the midras of the begadim. It's more focused on the dinim of the kalim. That's why it says kalim, kalef toherim. Obviously, there's the simple question about whether you became tameh, not in terms of midras, but whether you simply had lifted the zav. Fine. But in this case, the question of what happened to your kalim is also a function of the awareness of the individual. And therefore, if this woman knows that he's a kohen and therefore would be careful, she would have definitely made every attempt to avoid being metame him. And in the event that it was unavoidable because they're both on this rowboat, she would have told him. If he has no reason to think that she knows that he's a kohen, so then he's got to face the awkward situation and ask her, "Madam, may I ask you a personal question?" And that's the way it goes. Okay, Shmoo, do we continue?
Don't rock the boat.
Yes, finish the parak.
Okay.
Finish the parak.
Even though Barnea says don't rock the boat.
Roke. Don't rock the boat.
Oh, I got you. Don't rock the boat. Very good. Very good indeed.
We're a okay. Stiff distance.
So now, our next Mishnah enters into a different question. Because what we've been talking about until now is the sfeikas that we have about whether we were exposed to tuma through what happened to us. How about if the sfeikas arise through contradictory reports of what happened to us? So there we have, I don't know who's right. Let's talk about a case like this. Eid echad omer nitma. There's a witness who says, listen, I saw that somebody stepped on your clothes. Now, the guy himself says, it's absolutely not the case, okay? Or he says, that thing that you saw me step on, you claim I had stepped on that dead sheretz. It looked like that to you, but I was very careful to avoid it. My foot never came in contact with it. So therefore, if you only have one aid, the din is that one aid is not considered to be an actual proof that something happened. Normally we say, Eid Echad Ne'eman Bi'Yisurin. That's true. But if the person himself says, I know that that's not the case, we assume that a person knows more about himself than what a single witness is saying. So this is not considered to even be a suffix. This is simply a person has a right to rely on what he knows. So this is not one of the cases of Sveikas. Now, how about if there's two witnesses? So Shnayim Omrim Nitmei, two witnesses tell him you became Tamei. And he still says, I know for a fact that I did not become Tamei. So Rabbi Meir says, in such a case, the witnesses are that which defines the halacha. And therefore he is Tamei. And even Benogea himself, he would then be mechuyev to go to the mikveh and get tar before he's allowed to eat truma and so on and so forth. But the Chachamim say, even against two witnesses, if you mean we know for a fact that you are tahor, then we have every reason to believe that what you're saying is right. Now, not because we believe what he's saying against the two witnesses. So let's say the two witnesses say, we saw what you touched was a sheretz. And he says, no, you only thought it was a sheretz. It's not a sheretz. That we would not believe a person who is going against Aden, because Aden defined the halacha in the Torah. But if the guy doesn't say that, he says, no, I am not Tameh. So then what we do is we take a definition of what he said as being something that is not any way a contradiction of the witnesses. There could be different ways of interpreting that. So let's say the witnesses say that was a sheretz. Then he says, yes, absolutely, that was a sheretz. But my foot had never come into contact with it. Or, and they said, well, we didn't see exactly your foot touch it. Okay, fine. So then he's not contradicting the Eidim. Or if he didn't say anything, he just says, no, I'm Tahar. Then we understand that what he meant was, of course I came into touch with it, but I went directly to the mikveh right after that. What do you think? I'm an idiot. So fine. So then we interpret what he said to mean that. And therefore we have a machlokas here between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether we go for such an interpretation. Now, the next case, which is the third case in our Mishnah, is that Eid Omer Nitma, he doesn't know, and there are two witnesses that say that actually that single Eid is wrong, and we saw that it was Lo Nitma. So in that case, Bein Bereshut HaYachid, Bein Bereshut HaRabim, the din is that we do not pay attention to Ein Mokam Shel Echad Ein Divrei Echad B'Mokam Shayim. If we have two witnesses that say that he's Tahar, then he's Tahar. And we ignore a Eid Echad in the place of the two witnesses. And therefore we know for a fact he's not Tami, it's not even a Suffolk. But what about in a case where Shnayim Omrim Nitma, and there we have an Eid Echad that says Lo Nitma, and would it matter whether it's Brishus HaRam or Zayachid? No, it would be the same Sfora. We would be Machmer in that case, even in Rishut HaRabim, again, because we say, Ein Dvarim Shel Echad, V'Bakam Shnayim, it's not even a suffix. So it doesn't matter whether it's in the direction of Tumah, it's in the direction of Tyra, whether it's Rishus HaYachid, Rishus HaRabim. Now, all that we're interested in is the Rabim. How about where we have two Eidei Echad that are contradicting himself, and the person himself doesn't know? But we could even have two double Eidim, but they're not Eidim that are kosher in court, in which case no matter if you've got two against two or three against three, it would be the same. Maybe different if we have Rov Deas, as we'll see. So Eid Echad Omer Nitma, the Eid Echad Omer Lo Nitma. Or you can have a woman saying Nitma or Lo Nitma. There's no difference between a single witness who's a man and a single witness who's a woman. If it's the same witness that is Makrisha or Makrish, then it's a classic case of Suffolk. We don't know what happened. And therefore, Bereshut HaYachid Tameh, Bereshut HaRabim Tahar. So it's not that we're ignoring the testimony of an Eid Echad, but it also doesn't define the realities. And therefore, what you're left with is a Suffolk Medina. But a Suffolk Medina goes directly into the halacha of Suffolk Tumah Brishus HaRabim and Suffolk Tumah Brishus HaYachid. And therefore, this leaves us with the classic situation, Brishut HaRabim Tahar and Brishut HaYachid Tameh. So now we've gone through the various levels of Sveikas. We've gone through in the previous parak those that are Vadai Tahar. We've gone to the parak before that, those special Sveikas that are Vadai Tameh. Now we've gone through the fascinating interactions where there are different people that are involved who went in different roads, are saying different things, or who touch different things, and who are asking different things, one for themselves, one for the other. That was the issues that we had discussed throughout this parak. And then we have to go into the details of what is the definition of Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYachid, and how they interrelate over time. And this, Bezrat Hashem, we shall start under the guidance of our esteemed leader, Shmu, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow.